Englandy. This is the moment the crowd have waited for. Just look at him go.
Congratulations, Catherine, on your wonderful performance in winning the gold medal in the 400 metre event of the Commonwealth Games.
Ian Thorpe really going for it. 3:40.17. This is absolutely amazing.
Tracy Wickham, a great world record here in Edmonton, and there it is, a world record.
The Diamonds Commonwealth drought has broken.
The hockey revolution has a golden uprising.
Adam Ayres, congratulations, and a games record. Adam Ayres has got a hat-trick of gold medals at the Commonwealth Games.
This is something to savour, something to remember for the rest of your life.
Get set, Australia. Welcome to Gold Coast Gold. Here's your host, Dave Colbert.
Hello and welcome to Gold Coast Gold. I'm David Colbert. This week, our Legend series wraps up as we speak with the man responsible for one of the most memorable moments of the Commonwealth Games, marathon man Rob DiCostella. Our chat with Deke is coming up shortly. And we also have our first team announcement. Which team it is will all be revealed in the news in just a moment. So as we count down with just 20 Fridays to go to the Gold Coast Games, let's take a look at the headlines from another big week in Commonwealth Games news. The first Australian team for the Games has been unveiled, with a six-strong triathlon team set to compete on the opening days of the Gold Coast Games. Joining automatic nominations Jake Birtwistle and Ashley Gentle and Charlotte McSwain will be discretionary selections, the Queensland trio of Luke Willian, Matt Hauser and Gillian Backhouse. Hauser won the ITU World Junior Championships in Rotterdam this year and is the youngest member of the team at just 19, whilst McShane, a former ITU World Under 23 World Champion, is the oldest at 27. Rio Olympian Gentle is the sole survivor from the 2014 Commonwealth Games team from Glasgow and the only survivor from the 2016 Rio Olympic Games team. The full paratriathlon team, which already includes automatic nominees Bill Chaffee and Emily Tapp, won't be finalised until the new year. The women and the men will race for the first medals of the Games on April the 5th before the mixed teams relay and paratriathlon on April the 7th. Australia's won six medals contested over three games, with medals in Manchester and Melbourne and in Glasgow, two of them gold to Brad Snowsill and Brad Carlefelt in Melbourne in 2006. So congratulations, the first members of the Australian team for the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games are in, our six members in triathlon. It's been a big week in hockey, with the Hockey Roos and Kookaburras in action in the International Festival of Hockey. The Kookaburras backed up last month's Oceania Cup triumph by defeating New Zealand 2-1 to claim the men's tournament. Meanwhile, the Hockey Roos finished in third place after going down 3-2 to Japan to miss the finals. The Australians defeated the USA 5-1 in the bronze medal playoff. The Hockey Roos then bounced back, defeating Japan 5-1 and 2-1 in the opening matches of their test series in Adelaide. The Kookaburras are next in action in India at the World League finals in early December. The team has been grouped with England, Germany and India in the eight-team competition. Australia won the last World League final 2 years ago in India, and we're runners-up to the Netherlands in 2013. In diving, Dominic Bedgewood won a silver medal at the FINA Grand Prix diving event on the Gold Coast. Bedgewood was only narrowly edged out by China's Jian Tang in the men's platform final. The 23-year-old Queenslander won gold in Glasgow in the synchronised 10-metre platform alongside Matthew Mitchum, and will be aiming to add to his gold medal tally on the Gold Coast in April. In the women's synchro springboard, Madison Keeney and Annabelle Smith and Esther Quinn and Georgia Sheehan were in contention for gold medals before posting no dives late in the competition, ending up in fourth and fifth place respectively. Melissa Wu teamed with Tanika Kovchenko to win the women's platform synchro, and good results for our divers. In cycling, Matthew Glatzer created history, becoming the first rider to post a sub-1 minute, 1 kilometre time trial at sea level with a 59.970-second ride at the Manchester Track World Cup. Less than 20 minutes after his gold medal ride, he returned to the track, sprinting to fourth place in the Kieran. The Australian track cycling team now heads to New Zealand ahead of the 2018 Oceania Championships, which will be held from November 20 to 23. In swimming, Emily Seebohm collected 5 medals at the FINA World Cup in Beijing. Seabomb secured gold in the 50-metre backstroke, silver in the 100 backstroke, 200-metre individual medley, and the mixed 4x50-metre medley relay, plus bronze in the 100-metre individual medley. In the mixed 4x50 freestyle, the Aussie quartet of Cam McAvoy, Alexander Graham, Bronte and Kate Campbell grabbed gold, and Kate claimed silver in both the 100, in the 50 and the 100 freestyle, as well as the mixed medley. Number of our swimmers now move to Tokyo for the next leg of the FINA World Cup. Meanwhile, Seabomb joins athletes Sally Pearson and Isis Holt, along with cyclist Michael Matthews, as nominees for the ABC Sports Personality of the Year. The Diamonds and the Men's Cycling Team Pursuit have been nominated for the Team Awards, and you can vote for both awards at aisawards.abc.net.au. In lawn bowls, the New Zealand Blackjacks have clinched the Trans-Tasman Trophy for just the third time in a decade. The Kiwis won on a countback after winning the women's event and only narrowly losing the men's event after 3 days of competition at the games venue at Broadbeach on the Gold Coast. The Trans-Tasman is the last international hit-out before the games for our lawn bowlers. Commonwealth Games Australia is set to announce the 15-strong Jackaroos team, featuring 10 able-bodied and 5 parasport athletes, early next month. In basketball, Basketball Australia has announced a 12-man team to the World Cup qualifiers later this month. 12 boomers representing 7 NBL clubs have been chosen, with the first contest against Chinese Taipei in Taiwan on November 24, before the team flies home directly to face Japan in Adelaide on November 27. In brief, the stars of Australian beach volleyball will be in action at Volley Fest in Manly over the next week. Canada has named a youthful team of 6 athletes to take on Australia and the rest of the Commonwealth in the Commonwealth Games triathlon events. In women's rugby sevens, our team finished second at the Oceania Rugby Sevens Championships after falling to New Zealand 5-12 in the championship final, with the Aussie men team taking third after the bronze medal playoff against Samoa was suspended due to torrential rain, meaning Australia finished third place on points. In table tennis, Table Tennis Australia has announced that the Games qualifying tournament will take place on the Gold Coast from the 1st to the 14th of January. And in Games organising news, the Gold Coast 2018 volunteers have officially began their training for next year's Commonwealth Games as the Game Shapers were presented with their uniforms. And finally, the final tickets go on sale for the Games on Monday, the 20th of November. Available tickets include swimming, diving, track cycling, gymnastics, netball and the opening ceremony. Tickets will be available on a first-come, first-served basis on Monday from the Games website. And that's this week's Commonwealth Games news. Our Legend series on Gold Coast Gold continues, and this is one of my favourites, a former teammate and one of the greats responsible for one of the most memorable moments of the Brisbane Commonwealth Games back in 1982. It's the marathon man himself, Rob De Castella. Welcome, Deke, to Gold Coast Gold.
Thanks, Dave. Great to join you and everyone who's listening.
1982 just seems like yesterday.
I wish. It's a long time ago, but well and truly entrenched in my memories.
It's amazing, isn't it? We recently celebrated the 25th anniversary of that Commonwealth Games, and every Games has its moments. And of 1982, the marathon was probably the moment of the Games. There are lots of great moments, of course, Matilda in the opening ceremony and performances, you know, on the track and the field and other sports as well. But for whatever reason, it's your marathon that's probably most remembered.
Oh, look, it was a great race, and it was, you know, sort of as the Games were coming to a close, the last or second last day, and I think the way the whole race unfolded and the fact that it started early in the morning, so, you know, people were well and truly conditioned to flicking on breakfast TV as they ate their Wheaties and look at the updates and the results from the previous day. And when they flicked it on that morning, the marathon was well and truly in full swing. And it sort of captured a lot of people's imagination. I still have people coming up to me today and recounting where they were and what they did and you know the strong and vivid memories that they have of the race. So it was an exciting race, and the marathon is always, you know, one of the blue ribbon events. So I think the fact that it was a home Commonwealth Games in Brisbane and And the enthusiasm of the nation was really captivated by those Commonwealth Games, and the race was pretty exciting as well.
Why do you, there's so much to talk about just about the marathon, and we've got a bit of ground to cover, but why do you think, you're right about the marathon being one of the blue ribbon events, it's just behind the long jump, of course, in the pecking order of track and field, but they're the top two. Why do you think the marathon captures people's attention like it does?
Oh, look, you know, the marathon is, there's a mystique around it, entrenched in the origins of the event. I don't think there are too many other track and field events that have the same history and story that people are aware of. You know, the great battle from on the plains of Marathon and 490 BC and Pheidippides and you know, it's just the story. And then it's an event which has captivated millions of people around the world, to not because they want to become, you know, Commonwealth Games champions, but because they just want to champion something in their own you know, sort of life. So there's probably no other event, I think, like it, where so many people just go to the start line because they want to run a marathon, and once they've done it, even if they haven't done it, they can still relate to the challenge, but the simplicity. So it's very unique, I think.
Didn't end well for Pheidippides, though.
didn't end well, but he's left a wonderful legacy.
dropped dead after announcing the victory, unfortunately for him. Luckily that morning, like I was as a high school student turning on the TV, we didn't turn the TV off, because, you know, if you joined the race, you know, three quarters of the way through, you would have thought it was over.
Yeah, I think so, and I think people probably didn't have an appreciation of the strategy or the romance that can happen within a marathon. And I think when, you know, I was able to as you know, going in as clear favourite, I'd had a great run the year before up in Japan and set, you know, what subsequently was a world record. And then, you know, to turn the TV, the coverage on, and I was so far behind at halfway, but then gradually started to claw my way back to the two Tanzanians. And I think it was just, even though, you know, some people might think watching people run 42Ks, watching grass grow, but there was a lot of excitement, and I think, you know, sort of a great exposure of the complexity and the strategy that falls within an event such as the marathon. And and then, you know, for me as an Aussie to come away with the victory, you know, sort of, it was a, you know, just one of those great events.
Let's just go back to the beginning of your sporting career, growing up in Melbourne, and your coach, Pat Clohessy, and how that came to pass. School athletics was a big part of your life growing up. How did you become a marathon runner?
I started running cross country when I was at Xavier College, or at Burke Hall even before that. Had a good group of mates. We used to meet up after school and go for a couple of training runs around the boulevard, around Kew, and then we'd compete on the weekends in the local inter school cross countries. And back in those days, you know, I was very much a plodder and used to finish, you know, sort of halfway back in the field, and used to think I was doing pretty well if I, you know, made the scoring members of the school team. And then, you know, sort of I just stuck with it and then went up to the senior school, to Xavier College, where I came across Pat. And gradually my performances started to get better and better, and then eventually I started winning those schoolboy cross countries and went on and started winning the national cross country and set a couple of national records, junior records on the track from 3K, 5K and 10K. And you know, it just sort of progressed from there. And Pat was an absolute integral part of my development, both from a physical and physiological side, but also from the psychological side of it as well. And he's, you know, I think the most generous person I've ever come across. So sincere and humble and generous, and the fact that he himself was a great distance runner and spent time in the US on scholarship, college scholarship there, was one of the first Aussies to go over and do that. Travelled through Europe with the great New Zealand runners of Murray Helberg and Peter Snell back in the old Arthur Lydiard days. And he just had a wisdom about him that I was very privileged and so fortunate to be able to draw on. And, you know, I had a few ups and downs over the years, but you know, just gradually got fitter and stronger and, you know, ended up running my first marathon to try to qualify for the Moscow Olympics back in 1980. So I ran the Victorian titles in 79 and won that and qualified, ran a qualifying time of about 2:14. And I was already reasonably good over the shorter distance, but my marathon performance took me to another level, and it was quite clear to me and Pat and everyone else that the marathon was going to be my event. So from pretty much, you know, 1979, 1980 onwards, I was predominantly focused on the marathon and still did world cross country and track races on the Australian scene, but also in Europe as well. A lot of road races through Europe and through the US. And, you know, for that decade, I was just a professional athlete living and training overseas, and everything revolved around my two training sessions a day. And it was a wonderful, you know, a wonderfully simplistic life in so many ways. The capacity to be able to indulge yourself in whatever you needed to do to be a better athlete was a wonderful, you know, a dream come true for someone with some talent and aspirations.
You talk about the psychology of Pat Clohessy, and I have fond memories of watching him at the RAS in Canberra, standing on the infield with his stopwatch, telling every athlete who went past that they were looking good, looking great, even if they weren't. That's what he would tell them. The psychology of the marathon is something that's special, and, you know, I've had the privilege, Deke, of sitting next to you in the commentary box on many occasions, and you know that, you know, the wall is coming. You're going to hit the wall. You just want to sit down on the side of the road at some stage. It's going to happen. It's inevitable, is a message that's indelible in my brain. How did you get through all of that? Because, you know, in training and in the race itself, there comes a time every time where you just want to say, no, I've had enough of this. I'm going to stop.
Yeah, look, it is, and I think that's the great mystery of the marathon. It's one of the great appeals, is that you know, despite it's you know, 42 kilometres, we all know that the marathon really starts at 30k. You know, the marathon is that last 12.2k, and you know, sort of all of the training and all the preparation gets you to around 30k. And then you know, you run out of glycogen, you run out of energy, and you really have to draw on your spirit. You know, you have to draw on your strength, and just push through and be able to concentrate and focus. And I think that's, you know, that's the great appeal that it has. It seems crazy that, you know, sort of so much of our world we have created for ourselves is about making our lives more comfortable. And we have more people than ever before going to the start line of a marathon, knowing that it's not going to be comfortable, knowing that it's the complete opposite, and you're going to be physically exhausted and mentally broken, but you're going to really test yourself. And I think that's, you know, that's the great thing about it, is that it's an opportunity to really find out who you are. When you do hit the wall and you've got nothing left, the only thing you do have left is your spirit, and you strip away all of the superficialities of things that we think are important, and you draw on what's left. How I got through it, I mean, I trained damn hard, you know. I mean, I was running, you know, 200 to 220, 230K every week. Every second day was a hard, tough training session. So, you know, you train hard, you recover. I'd do two long runs, a 30K and a 35K run every week, every Wednesday and every Sunday. And I think the training prepares you physically. It certainly gives you the capacity to run through that wall or to keep on going when you hit it. But it also trains you mentally as well. You know, the fact that you're constantly tired, you know, every day is a struggle to get out of bed and go for a run. And I think it's that mental toughness that you develop through the training, which is probably just as important as the physical toughness that you develop from a physiological side. So that when you are out there and you're representing Australia, or you're aiming to run a super fast time on one of the big city marathons, everything revolves around just, you know, sort of the moment. Every single stride, every single step that you take is 100% concentration, and there's no, you know, there's no backing off. There's no, it's not like, you know, playing cricket where you can, you know, relax a little bit between the deliveries. Every single stride, you're absolutely committed and concentrating and focused on what needs to be done, and it's an incredible test.
Sometimes though, the body doesn't let you do what it wants to do, and you know, you talked about that race in Fukuoka in 81. 82 was your first Games gold. You won the world championship in 83, the first world athletics championships, and you were the favourite probably for the 84 Olympic Games, where you ended up finishing in fifth place. And it was that the Olympics was the one thing that eluded you. And it's surely your physical preparation was fine, and sometimes the body just doesn't allow you to do what your dreams have in store for you.
Yeah, look, it was, you know, LA was, in hindsight, a big disappointment. And you know, I was in great form. And I think I was a victim of my own fanaticism, my own commitment and dedication, because I'd run so well in the years leading up to it. But because it was the Olympics, I thought I needed to do even more. And I, you know, I overcooked myself early on in the year through, you know, sort of February, March, April, leading into the games, and I was just, you know, completely wasted myself, overtrained, and was really struggling. And you know, I was in hindsight lucky to recover enough to finish fifth. But it is a disappointment because, you know, it was a lost opportunity. I think, you know, if I had have run as well as I had have in previous years, I would have probably, you know, come away with a medal, if not a gold medal. But, you know, I mean, in hindsight, you know, you do what you do what you think you need to do, and it wasn't through being lazy or not trying. If anything, it was the opposite. I probably tried too hard and just overdid it, unfortunately.
What is it about the marathon, Deacon, Australians, that, you know, our athletes always want to run in every championship? You know, we've seen Jess Trengove and the fantastic performance that she did in London this year at the World Championships, and we've spoken to her on Gold Coast Gold, but for Mona and yourself, you know, you came back in 1986 to run the Commonwealth Games at a time when, you know, the big money marathons were in almost their prime. They're going pretty well now, but, you know, we're really growing. And the choice to run for your country at a Commonwealth Games rather than running another big city marathon for the paycheck.
Well, Australian marathons, marathoners have got an incredible history, and we've got a really strong culture. We've got a really strong tradition going back to the days of Derek Clayton, and you know, that's something which all marathoners, I think, respect and hold very dear and consider to be very important to maintain. You know, the culture of when you're representing Australia in the marathon, if you have a bad day and you can't finish, well, you know, you take your Australian singlet off halfway through or wherever you pull out, and you leave it on the side of the road and you walk back without that Australian singlet. Because when we go to the start line in our national colours, we have an obligation to finish in them. And if you can't do that, then you leave it behind. And things like that, and Jess has continued that tradition. Monas, obviously, Lisa Rondicki, Michael Shelley. We've got, a wonderful culture and tradition that's been developed. And maybe that's, born out of the fact that, we do share a wonderful camaraderie. We share a purpose of struggle. We know what everyone has had to do to get to the starting line, how hard they've had to train. And because of that, we have a wonderful respect and admiration for each other, as we do around the world. The marathon, the camaraderie of international marathoning is pretty special as well. And, when you train that hard, there's not too many egos out there. The egos are sweated out and lost on the hills and the hard work. So there's that, very strong culture, which is really important for us to continue and maintain.
We saw that again this year with Josh Harris, who suffered an injury in the lead-up and took his singlet off and was on the back of the motorbike going back to the start line, but the singlet was in his back pocket as he wasn't able to finish. Let's just fast forward now to what you're doing now, Deke, and the Indigenous Marathon Foundation started off as the Indigenous Marathon Project, where you're finding young kids in the outback of Australia to go and run a marathon. And, the ultimate goal, I guess, was originally to find someone to represent Australia at the Olympic Games, but it's become so much more than that now.
Yeah, you're right, Dave. I mean, I started this back in 2009, 2010, and back then we took four Aboriginal fellows from Central Australia to New York. And for me, it was the first time I'd really spent any time with Indigenous Australians. I spent more time with Africans travelling around the world and knew more about African culture than I did about our own Australian Indigenous culture, and that's really sad. And back in 2010, as I got to know those four fellas and got to meet their families and travel to their communities, I was very saddened and ashamed by what I saw. We have third world issues and problems in our own backyard, and for us as a proud nation, and for me as a proud Australian who's represented this country for decades, it was a very confronting and a difficult thing to reconcile, and it's been a privilege for me over the last 8 years to work with young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island people in their communities, from little remote communities in Arnhem Land and the APY lands, through to the country towns and regional centres, through to the major cities. So it encompasses the whole country and both Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island communities and cultures. And to use the marathon and use running to address the health issues. I mean, we have massive problems with chronic disease and lifestyle-related diseases of diabetes and renal failure and heart disease and strokes and things. And we all know that running and exercise is a great way for us to improve our physical health. But the marathon and even running is more powerful than affecting just the chronic disease. It affects the mental health. It affects the way you feel about yourself. And what I saw back in 2010 was what was most confronting was not so much the obesity and the smoking and the grog and all that sort of stuff. It was a culture of hopelessness that I was confronted with. It was a culture of, why should I bother? There's nothing for me. I've got no future. I have no dreams and no aspirations. And it made me realise that if you feel as though you're worthless and you have no value, then it doesn't matter what programs are out there, you'll never make an effort to improve your health because you don't believe that it's worth it. I realised very early on that what we have to do is to instill a sense of pride and a sense of self-worth in our Indigenous Australia, or the whole country. But what we're focusing on is our young men and women, 18 to 30 year olds. So they've, you know, sort of left school and they're young parents and getting their first jobs and stuff like that. And we use running and we use the marathon to do that. Because when you do something that's hard, when you achieve a difficult goal, you feel incredibly proud of yourself. And that's what the marathon does. You know, it's as simple as putting one foot in front of the other, but it's as hard as running 42.2K. And when you do cross that finish line, the sense of pride and the sense of self-worth is overwhelming. And that's what we do. You know, in the last 8 years, we've got 75 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island graduates from all around the country who've gone on and run and finished a major international marathon. And when they finish that marathon, that's the start of when we start working with them in our foundation. It's almost like, you know, that's putting them through college and they've come out with a degree. And it's, well, now you've got your degree, what are you going to do with it? So we through our foundation, raise funds to provide scholarships and mentoring and grants and assist them to set up their own programs. A lot of them come out because there's also the education, so they come out with a qualification in sport and recreation and athletic coaching and first aid. So we then support them to set up their own little running clubs and running events and help them to go on and look at, you know, progressing through employment and careers. And, you know, we've got one of our girls up in a remote community in Arnhem Land who's now on the Shire. She's on the local council, so she's stepping into the political role, and she never would have done that if it wasn't for the fact that we took her to New York and we've continued to mentor her and instill that sense of self-worth and the realisation that she can make a difference.
And when you look at the reaction just recently in New York when, you know, your graduates cross the line, it's pretty emotional.
Oh, look, it is. And you know, they don't do it just because they want to go to New York, or they don't do it because they want to run a marathon. They do it because they've had a gutful of all of the shit that's out there and they want things to change. They don't want their sons and daughters and their nephews and nieces to go through what they've been through. And you know, they, when they do cross that finish line, it's an incredibly emotional celebration of that realization that they've done it, and the realization that if they can do that, they can do anything. And that's, you know, that's incredibly exciting, and it's something I'm very proud of, because as an athlete, what I did was great, you know, representing Australia for Olympic Games and Commonwealth Games and all that sort of stuff. But I think what I'm doing now is more important for the country, because the situation with our Indigenous Australians and our Indigenous culture is a national disgrace, and we need to find ways to celebrate our Indigenous culture, and we need to find ways to embrace that as part of our national identity as Australians. You know, we're so lucky and privileged to have this wonderful Indigenous culture that has thrived for tens of thousands of years, and it's something which we need to find a way to make all Australians proud of and embrace as part of our identity.
And you've just signed an agreement with Commonwealth Games Australia as well to work with them and the community partnerships as well, which is great news.
Yeah, it is, and it's wonderful. The running and the sporting community have really embraced and seen, I think, the impact that we've had, and realised that together we can make an even greater difference. And it's wonderful for us now to have an MOU with the Commonwealth Games Association, and really looking to use the Commonwealth Games and sport as a way to showcase our amazing young Indigenous men and women and celebrate their achievements and their strength and resilience, and also to showcase our wonderful culture, Indigenous culture.
Just before we go, Deke, Gold Coast, home games for our athletes. You know what it's like. Michael Shelley's the defending champion in the men's marathon. Jess Trengove will be one of the favourites in the women's marathon. Gold Coast organisers just recently announced, which I think is a fantastic idea, the gold run. So anyone can line up after the para marathons are finished and just after the start of the men's and women's marathon and run a 5K on the course and then watch the marathon conclude. What can we all expect from the Gold Coast Marathon?
Oh, look, it's going to be sensational. It's going to be an amazing Games. I mean, the Gold Coast itself, what a backdrop for the Commonwealth Games, and what an opportunity to showcase our country to the world. And you know, the marathon itself, the Gold Coast Airport Marathon, which has been going now for decades, is probably the biggest marathon in Australia, and the organisers of that are now delivering the Commonwealth Games Marathon or marathons. So I know that the event logistically is going to be absolutely spectacular and first class. The venue and the courses are going to be sensational, and the way that the Commonwealth Games organising committee have come up with this initiative to share the roads with the community is the first time it's ever been done, and that's the sort of innovative thinking which I think Australians are all so proud of what we do in this country so well. And I think we're going to see an amazing race. So, you know, it's great to have Michael and Jess up there leading the charge, and there's going to be a huge amount of pressure on them. But, you know, don't we love pressure?
What message do you have for them? A lot of our athletes, you know, really enjoying the Gold Coast Gold Series as they hear the experiences of former greats like yourself, but the current athletes as well. 20 Fridays to go today to the game, so there's still plenty of time to do the things you need to do. What message would you have to our marathon team as they prepare for the games?
Oh, look, just keep on doing what you're doing. I mean, don't make the same mistake I made in 1984 and think you've got to do extra. Just, you know, sort of stick to your program, stick to your routine. You know, make sure you get all of the little extra things that you need to do done, because they're the things that you're going to draw on over that last 5K. And we know the marathon starts at 30K. And from a competitive perspective, you've got to be able to run on hard over that last 5K. And that means you've got to have all of your reserves, both mental and physical, full to the brim on the starting line. So stay relaxed, stay happy, and embrace the moment, because this is going to be and deliver memories that are going to last a lifetime.
I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait. We've had a great legend series, Deke. We started with Raylene Boyle, who was inducted, elevated to legend status of the Sport Australia Hall of Fame, which you're a big part of. And then we spoke with Dawn Fraser, Kieran Perkins, Susie O'Neill, and now you, Deke. It's been a great thrill and pleasure, and we thank you for your time on Gold Coast Gold.
Thanks, Dave.
That's it for this edition of Gold Coast Gold. A reminder, you can subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an edition. You can join us at Commonwealth Games Australia on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to keep up with all the news regarding the Australian team at the 2018 Gold Coast Commonwealth Games. Until next week, thanks for your company on Gold Coast Gold.